Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Space trash.
Trash in space.
Space trash.
Lifestyles of the rich and Uranus.
Space trash.
Celebrities, they're trash. But the astrology can help us understand.
Transmission incoming.
Greetings, trashlings. Welcome back to another episode of Space Trash.
Lifestyles of the rich and Uranus. And I'm Sarah Armour.
And I'm Molly Malshine, and boy oh boy, Trashlings, do we have a surprise for you. We are introducing our new episode format today.
Indeed, we are, and I think you're going to love it.
So basically, what we're going to do from now on is we're interviewing people about their celebrity chart twins. It's really exciting. It's a great way to talk about astrology in a really accessible fashion while also making new friends and talking about celebs of yore.
Yeah. And also, like, I mean, you've heard us say it before. I'll reiterate it now. The celebrity news is not really newsing.
It is most certainly not. One of the stories that I had to throw on the reject pile today was Barry Keoghan dwarfed by Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce in Coachella photos. And it was a photo of them all in the crowd at a Coachella show. And like, he's just standing in front of them and he's a little bit short. He's like shorter than that. I was like,
The news is basically like Barry's short.
Yeah. I was like, what are we doing?
Barry shorter than these two other really tall people.
Yeah, so this is a great way to kind of make news where there is none.
That's right. Breaking news. Some of you are celebrity chart twins.
So who we're talking to today is my friend and yours, Jeff Plate. He's a musician, a lawyer, an entrepreneur, and he's on Jeopardy this week. Jeopardy on Wednesday. His episode airs. So Jeff is a Pisces sun, Aries moon, Virgo rising. So if you are that, if you have a crush on someone who is that, if you're related to someone who is that, this episode is going to give you some serious, serious insight into what makes that person tick, why they are the way they are, and how similar they may be to Steve Jobs. So that's really exciting. And that's coming up in a half hour or so. But first, we are going to talk about a few headlines.
Indeed, we must.
So first one, this is hot off the presses. The Cut just published this today. People are ending friendships because of Taylor Swift. The headline is Ending a Friendship Over Taylor Swift. And, you know, the writer, Laura Pitcher, I guess she interviewed like three or four people who have lost friendships because they simply could not agree on whether or not Taylor Swift is good, I guess.
Well, I don't even know if it was like Taylor Swift is good as much as it was like, I mean, yes, that was the crux of it. But I feel like the underlying thing was like this weird, almost like you're talking about like different like religions or like political affiliations. It's like it was sort of like the tone of the article or like a lot of these relationships that ended because of Taylor. It was just like, we're just not like, this isn't going to work because like, we're just not on the same page, as if it's like some kind of like an underlying core value that you support Taylor or that you're a Swiftie.
Well, I would say that was the tone of the quotes also, not the story, because the actual.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But we've been beating this drum forever. I mean, Sarah, why do we talk about space trash? Why do we talk about pop culture? Because why do humans gossip? It's a way to inform each other and be informed about what our values are without stating them outright. So,
right. Yeah.
I guess it's not really, I mean, it's not surprising that I have definitely argued with friends, like not as in we're arguing over, you know, whether the other person is a good person or not, but just definitely had arguments over pop culture. I haven't ended a friendship over it. I guess the only thing that's new here is that people are, they call it a parasocial relationship, but I think people get really condescending with that really quickly. But I guess the new thing in this story is that people are taking their fandom to the next level where they're like, yeah, I don't even want to be friends with you if you're not, if you don't share my fandoms. That seems new.
Right. Like the thing that I wanted to know is like, is that just a way to get out of, I guess in these examples in the article, were these just ways that people were getting out of relationships that they don't want to be in, but like didn't necessarily have a better excuse? Like,
I don't think so.
Or is it serious? Like, I don't know. That's so hard for me to imagine. Like, I mean, to not be able to disagree with your friends about a variety of things, I think is part of like, it's one of the essential parts of like just having conversations and growth and being interested. Like, unless you're going to speak to an echo chamber, like your entire life, like, shouldn't we all be able to disagree without being disagreeable? Like, isn't that what maketh a good conversation?
No, Sarah, where have you been? We can't do that anymore. We all want to be in echo chambers. Like, I definitely think these people feel fully righteous in their decision to leave these friends behind based on their Taylor Swift fandom. Like, these people fully believe that what they're doing is right and honorable, even because I think a big, it's tough.
It's
also
really funny to think about, like, it's just really funny that we're talking about Taylor Swift. Like, she's really become so much more than she ever intended.
No, she intended to be even
maybe
more
she
than
did
this.
Yeah, Sag Moon, she did. She's like, I am the barometer for all public everythings.
Right, exactly. I think, you know, I read somewhere, and I wish I could remember where I had read it so I could properly credit the person, but someone in some sort of some music criticism was saying that Taylor Swift is, you know, a perpetual victim in every single song. It's like nothing goes beyond the scope of her personal feelings, and she is always on the losing side. Like, someone has always wronged her in every single song. And, you know, it's definitely, it rang true to me, but it also felt a little unfair because I think most songwriting is pretty myopic like that. You know, what, like, how many songs really are there about the larger world? There's Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication, which is currently going viral because all these little dumb idiots are like, they predicted 2024 because there's like a line about a Swedish teen in it. And they're like, that's Greta Thunberg. And it's, yeah, it's so dumb. But like, that's like one of the rare songs, I guess, that isn't just about like, here's how I feel. You did something wrong to me. That's like every popular song, you know? But I do think that a lot of the people who really, really latch on to Taylor, like, what is it that they see in this music? I think it is intoxicating to feel like you are the wronged party a lot of the time, even if it is just on a, you know, a micro level. And I think, like, you know, I'm a huge Beyonce fan. What is it about Beyonce that's so intoxicating to me? I think it's the way that she is just, like, bold and brash and like, fuck you, in her music, not her everyday persona. But like, we all love these musicians for specific reasons. And I don't know, I think it's not, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not that surprising that a Swiftie in particular would be the person who has the capacity to feel wounded and feel righteous anger over that wound because you don't also like Taylor Swift.
Actually, right, there's an irony there where it's like, or I guess not irony,
it's not, it's like she's it's set like the blueprint.
It's like a right, I was just saying, right, it's like a mapping, it's like a mapping of the Taylor Swift ideology onto every relationship in real time based on Taylor Swift.
yes it's like, yeah, you're wrong, you are bad and mean, and
right, and I can't be friends with you anymore because I'm hurt about your bad opinion.
Right like, my favorite Taylor Swift song is Anti-Hero, because I think it's one of her only songs where she's not like, I'm the wronged victim. And I like, the only album that I've ever really gotten into was Reputation, because even though it's so silly, it is like the only one that to me doesn't feel, I don't know, I don't want to turn into shit on Taylor Day because it's irrelevant and who cares
what
I think of, Yeah, she we grudgingly respect her. That's our policy, and we stick to it. Yeah. But I don't know. Yeah, it's a really funny story. And I guess that's why people, yeah, like we cracked it. That's why.
I love that. That's hilarious, right? People that feel that their friends don't like Taylor Swift as much as they do feel victimized.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, therefore, and there was also, they have to end those toxic friendships.
Right. I'm reluctant to talk about why Taylor Swift annoys me, but I think this small detail is relevant because it has to do with this story. Part of why Taylor Swift annoys me is, yes, a lot of her music is about self-victimization. Her feud with Kanye West and Kim Kardashian was all about self-victimization and maybe even bending the truth a little bit in order to self-victimize. And in reality, when you look at her, she's a tall, thin, rich, white girl whose dad is in finance. Like, I think that's the thing that bugs me most of all about her whole project is that it does have a lot to do with
project.
Like, things are stacked against me. I'm the dork. I'm being bullied. I don't believe it. It just doesn't really ring true to me. And I also find it really interesting that she's so famous at a time when we're supposed to be like interrogating privilege, but hers just kind of like, we just brush it away because we're like, oh no, like they made fun of her for being tall when she was little or something. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. So I think a lot of the narratives surrounding her have to do with clinging to this idea of persecution where none exists. So it makes, like, it tracks to me that someone who is really into that might take it as being persecuted when their friend doesn't like the same band as them. But I have to say also, one of the people said it was stupid that their friend went to see Taylor in Europe. And that's mean. That's mean. You shouldn't say your friend is stupid for doing that.
No matter what, you should never tell your friend that doing something because that they love is stupid. Regard, like, Taylor's just who it was about. But right, that, like, that's why I was reading it. I'm like, oh, maybe these friendships just, like, did have to end. And there was, like, and Taylor Swift was, like, a perfect, like, Trojan horse to get into the door of let's end this friendship. Do you know what I mean? It's like, let's just use this Taylor Swift conversation to actually say what we really are feeling and thinking. Because, like, even what you're saying, like, people feeling victimized by others' lack of fandom for Swift is sort of the Taylor Swift blueprint. And if that's the case, then I don't really want to be your friend.
Right. I remember when Bad Blood came out and it was sort of like gesturing toward the Reputation era. And at the time I had a lot of younger interns and they were like, yeah, the media is obsessed with who she's dating. The whole world is obsessed with who she's dating. They won't ever give her a break. Everyone calls her a slut. And I was like, I've never heard that in my life. I've never heard anyone who was not a fan of hers talk about who she's dating. The only people who care about that are her fans. Now she's the biggest celebrity in the world, so other people are talking about it. But, you know, for the longest time, it was like the calls are coming from inside the house. Like the whole Reputation thing, it was like, okay, after Kanye did that to her, she became so popular. It was like a really great thing to happen to her. No one was really mad at her. I don't remember really seeing my, and I'm sure when you're the person, I'm sure to her, she saw a lot of mean tweets and everything. And
sure,
I'm not trying to discount her experience of it, but just her fans being like, yeah, she has it really hard because of the fact that she dated three guys. I was like, huh?
Right. It's also like,
I didn't know that.
That's what the songs are about.
Yeah. And I just, like, I don't know. I never thought, I don't know, but I wasn't really thinking about it. So whatever. Okay. What else happened? Coachella is going on, which is exciting, I guess. Grimes had a really bad set. And strangely, her ex-boyfriend's social media platform keeps showing me a million tweets about how bad her set was. And it's like, Elon, we get it.
That's funny.
Like, come on.
Come on, Elon.
I don't need to see 50 tweets about Grimes, but it is kind of funny because did you see this video
of her sucking? No.
She's just things are not working. Music cues are not going when they're supposed to go. And she just keeps going. And she's like so pissed. And I felt bad for her. And also, like, I mean, I don't know. She's rich now. She's getting billionaire child support.
Gold.
What? The motivation for rehearsing your set is gone.
Well, like, actually, so I don't see Grimes specifically, but I did see an article on a BuzzFeed celebrity that was listing almost every single person so far that has had like a big sort of like headline-ish show, like not just the headliners, but even some of the other big shows. They've all been having massive technical issues. Like Lana Del Rey had to stop her thing in the middle for a sound check and her mic kept going out. But what I was really thinking is, oh, all of this is what happens when you have Coachella during a Mercury retrograde.
Yeah, and you know every single person at Coachella is 100% aware of that and like,
right, like
talking about it.
If anything, like Grimes should have been like, instead of like, ugh, she should have been like, sorry, Mercury retrograde. Let's see how we all like handle this with as much grace and space as possible.
Yeah, for sure. Our hearts are with you, Grimes. We hope that you do something that a rich person can do tonight.
Yeah. And maybe just turn off the notifications for Twitter for tonight.
Yeah, don't check Twitter for a little while.
So, you know, but there's tons of articles right now that are coming out. Yeah, like this Coachella's first day was a massive technical problems. Not even the biggest stars were safe from ongoing microphone and sound issues and equipment malfunctions. Like every single person has had, they have, even Sabrina Carpenter had a piano pedal problem. Like every single person has had a Mercury retrograde Coachella experience.
Wow. It's crazy. Astrology is real.
Astrology is real.
I would still love to be there. I think it would be so fun.
It seems fun. What would you wear?
I would wear definitely like something Cowboy Carter inspired. I'm really liking all the cowboy memorabilia that people are wearing. Like in this picture of Teresa Giudice and Taylor Swift.
No, that was newsworthy.
Yeah, that was. Teresa's got on a hot pink cowboy hat and white heeled boots. I think that's fun. I like that. And it's funny because, I mean, not to make allegations of criminal activity, but the Photoshop on Teresa is very funny to me. And she just left Taylor, like, I mean, Taylor looks great, but Taylor's 30 years younger than her. But she just, Teresa looks like a Simpsons cartoon. And then Taylor is just like standing there, a normal person on an iPhone. You know what I mean?
Wow. Simpsons cartoon is an incredible reference and way to describe the way that Teresa looks in photos. That's so funny.
Doesn't she though?
Undeniably so.
Someone tweeted a Taylor Swift line that was like something about a careless man's careful daughter, because Therese always says, my daughters.
That is amazing. I want to see, what's the daughter that sings really badly? I want to see her at Coachella.
Gia.
Let's get Gia at Coachella.
That was fun. Two queens at the top of their fields who have sort of, you know, in my opinion, sinister energy. I had a feeling of impending. I had a feeling of impending doom all day yesterday. I was like, something really bad is going to happen. I can just feel it. And then this picture came out, and I was like, oh, okay. It was just that.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely an unexpected. I would say it's the most unexpected thing to come out of Coachella so far.
Yeah, for sure. Dark forces. Just for some reason, it felt dark to me. But I think a lot of people were like, two queens. And I was like, even if you are a Swiftie, like, Teresa's horrible.
I do wonder what the Venn diagram, like what the overlap would be between true Swifties and Teresa fans.
I know they seem so different because,
right,
like, you know, Taylor is all about, she's not really aggressive, and Teresa is extremely aggressive, but they both also kind of don't react until they're cornered. Like all of Taylor's songs that have any sort of sense of anger or retribution seem to be about how she's been so wronged that it came to this point, that you pushed her to this point. You know what I mean? And then like Teresa's not going to go after someone, but if they go after her, she's going to be like, bitch, I'm from Patterson. Did you forget? You know, like that feels like a, alternate universe Taylor. So I guess maybe there is some crossover.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And like, I would like to know like how that picture came about. Like of all the celebrities that Taylor, like I didn't see that many pictures of Taylor like actually posing with anyone. Like that was one of the only posed Taylor photos we got. You think Teresa was like, you gotta get a picture with me to send to my daughters, my daughters, yeah. Or that's probably what it was, right?
She was the only person shameless enough to actually be like, oh my God, Taylor, my daughters love you. Will you take a picture? Like she was, and then she blinked like 12 times. She was just the only one that was capable of, you know, not knowing that it wasn't cool to ask for a selfie.
And for that, we love her.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know if we love her. I'm not saying we love her in general or for all the things she does, but for that, I love her for that. I love her lack of awareness. We love her lack of awareness.
We love that. Will Smith came out to do Men in Black with J Balvin. That was lovely. I loved it.
It's nice to see Will just having a little fun again.
Yeah.
I feel like he's been under the dark cloud of his marriage for quite some time now.
Wouldn't it have been hilarious if he had done this, the Coachella, after he did the Oscar slap? Like, yeah. If literally like a month after the Oscar slap, he had done a surprise appearance with alien backup dancers and a giant alien head. I think everyone would have forgiven him immediately if that was what he had done. Like, he didn't need to publicly apologize. He didn't need to do anything. But if he had just been like, you guys remember I gave you Men in Black, right? Everyone would have been like, oh, yeah, it's fine. Whatever.
100%. Yeah, I feel like we totally forget what an actual powerhouse entertainer he is so often now that it's like almost heareartbreaking. It's like, at the same time, it makes me feel a little bit better just in terms of like, hey, man, like, every artist, you know, it's like you're as good as the last thing you did. It's like, you know, I feel like every artist sometimes, you know, the creative process has ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys. And it's nice to know that everybody valleys sometimes. But yeah, let's remember the peaks. Men in Black was iconic. Wiki Wild Wild West. I mean, I love Will Smith. I hate how much I love him, but I do.
I know. It's totally fine.
He seems like in his heyday, he was like real fun.
I'm sure this crossed your desk as well from Page Six. Megan Fox tells women to, quote, move on because men, quote, will drain you after ending Machine Gun Kelly engagement.
So actually, I listened to the whole Call Her Daddy Megan Fox interview.
Wow. And brave. You are one of our bravest soldiers. I just want you to know that.
Sir, yes, sir. Thank you for the acknowledgement, sir. I had to do it. I simply had to do it. And, you know, Megan Fox, she loves astrology, so that's lovely. But, like, there was a part in the interview where, so, like, they talk about Machine Gun Kelly, whatever. But then there was a part where, like, people wrote in questions, like, dating questions for Megan to answer. And, like, every single one of her answers was, like, it was, like, you know, I went on one date with a guy and like now he's ghosting me, but I really like him. Like, what would I do? And she's like, I can't answer that question. I wouldn't be friends with that girl.
What?
And then it was like, yeah,
no, actually,
it was like,
she's right.
Like, and like, she was like, okay, do you have any tips? Like, now that you're single again and you're back in the market, like, do you have any tips for like how to go like meet guys like out in the world? Like, if you're not going to do the apps, like, how do you meet guys in real life? She's like, I don't pay any attention to guys. And it's like, all right, Megan.
Yeah, because you're the hottest woman in the world.
You're so pretty.
Literally don't have to. Like, what advice is Megan Fox going to give anyone that's going to be relevant?
Right. Like, I wanted to actually say to Alex Cooper, like, hey, pick a different segment. Like, or just pick different questions because she's not going to relate to, like, she gave like four or five answers that were all the same, which is basically like the only way to really like get a guy is to like pay no attention to him at all and have other things going on and like really not even care if you ever talk to another guy again in your life. And it was like, okay. And then it was like, and either way, like,
hot.
Why would you want a man? Well, that's what like the context that was missing. And then she's like, and like ultimately, like, why would anybody want a man? Like, why would anybody want that? Like, it's like, it's nothing but a distraction. Like, I'm done with men. Like, and it's just like, all right, like, this is a little fresh off a breakup here. And you're too hot to have any context for how it works in the real world out here. So like, I don't know. I just think maybe these are the wrong questions, Alex.
That's really funny. But she is right. I mean, Don't ever chase a man, no matter what you look like. It's too embarrassing to do that. You can't.
100%. And I also think she's right. Like, in general, for those that were looking for answers to Megan's question, as somebody who's closer to like a 6 than a 10, I would say that there is something that, I mean, we be meeting people. There's like a fine line between being out in public and being approachable, but then also doing something else. Like, so for me, for example, I sit at a lot of pool hotels and tiki bars, just doing my work, but also enjoying pretending that I'm staying at the hotel. So I'm eating the hotel food that I'm going to get in the pool. And the way that I've found that meeting people is the most, when I feel most like the flame that the moths are attracting, it's when like the other day I bought like this new, I thought it was like a handheld audio little auto recorder. Turns out it was actually like a pod mic when I didn't need it. But I sat at the bar and I started to just like unbox my new little Samsung doodad. And there were guys in the area that were cute. So like I positioned my body like slightly toward, like I wasn't like shoulders, like they weren't sitting behind me. I positioned it so that I was sort of like in the, you know, I was in their, like my shoulders were towards their zone. But otherwise, yes, like I did not look up. I did not make eye contact. I literally was doing my own thing. I could tell that they were like, what is she up to?
Men are like T-Rexes. Like they're not, they can't really see you unless you put your boobs in their face.
Right. So like you want to just position your body in a certain way, but otherwise look like you don't even know that there are guys there.
Literally. That's it. That's literally
That's my
it.
Advice. Yeah. And the other thing is, of course it worked, but not of course. Yes. but and then the other piece of advice that I would give is, this obviously depends on, like, if you're sitting in like a library, it's going to be different kind of vibes. It's, you know, I don't know who's been to the library recently, but you never know. I guess like the other piece of advice though, I would say is like, so another group of guys were there and they were talking to the bartender and they were trying to talk about Neil Patrick Harris, but they kept calling him Patrick Neil Harris. Now I had my headphones on, but actually I wasn't listening to anything at the time. I was eavesdropping. So at one point I just look up and I was like, Neil Patrick Harris. And they're like, So like, if anything, the way to start a conversation is just like to correct them in a fairly public, like a conversation that's being like publicly acted out. If you have the right name so that they can actually talk about, you know, Doctor Who or whatever, so they can actually talk about whatever dumb like show they were trying to talk about, then I would correct them when they're wrong in a very surprising way. And otherwise, I have no idea. Those are my two pieces of advice.
Yes, they love that. That's what was so crazy to me about like a few years ago when people started being like, you can't interrupt men in a meeting and men will always interrupt you and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, men, like, just they love it when you stomp all over them and correct them and interrupt. Like, just what? Yeah, who told you couldn't interrupt men? Who told you that? They were lying.
Well, and like per the original, like Taylor Swift as like a barometer for like, or barometer.
Yeah.
Barometer. Taylor Swift has a barometer for like where this friendship is going to go. It's like, I do feel like if you're in a conversation or a boardroom with a guy who's like, whoa, I was talking, then it's like, all right, this might not work. I would rather give my attention to the large subgenre of men that are like, oh, correct me.
Also, like, that guy looks like a douche in the meeting. And, right. Like, you're
like,
fine.
Not a cool dude, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next we're going to continue this conversation by doing JoJo Siwa's birth chart, because JoJo is having a Siwanaissance, I guess we can call it that.
Whoa.
She has compared herself to Miley Cyrus in the Bangers era,
yeah,
to much ridicule online. I think she's making a point, but we're going to do that on the Patreon. So you can listen to that at patreon.com/spacetrashpodcast. Join the page.
I was going to say JoJo's having a Momo, but I think I like yours better. Siwanaissance.
JoJo's having a Momo also. Yeah, she is having a Momo. A Momo and a Siwanaissance. They both work. Patreon.com/spacetrashpodcast if you want to hear us talk about JoJo Siwa's birth chart. And until then, here's our interview with Jeff Plate.
Enjoy.
Okay, here we are on our inaugural jaunt into the world of celebrity chart twins, and we've got a celebrity guest, Jeopardy's own Jeff Plate Esquire. Jeff, hello.
Hi, how are you? Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. We're so excited to go down this path. We've been looking into your chart. What a chart it is. It's really an interesting chart. Sarah, what words come to mind when you see this Pisces Sun, Aries Moon, Virgo Rising combo?
On a basic non-celebrity level, when I look at your chart, I'm like, wow, this is a guy who's like really creative, but also does homework. And that is an unbelievable sort of combination. You know, somebody that's a Pisces, Mars, Sun conjunction in Pisces, you are super creative. You're super dreamy. You have really, like, you probably remember your, I hope you keep a dream journal. You might remember your dreams. You have like a very sort of masterful creative essence. Your rising is in Virgo, which means actually you lead with good punctuation and proofreading. And then your moon in the 8th house in Aries is like, ultimately, because of this winning combination, you're not afraid to go get what you want.
Does that sound accurate, Jeff?
So first of all, no. Yes, all of that is amazing stuff. I was actually really excited to be on the podcast because I've not really like done any of this stuff. So this is my first like chart reading or I don't know. There possibly are some exes that have done my chart, but I don't think they shared it with me. But in terms yeah. of like, yeah, whoa. I mean, I think some of the broad points, obviously there was a lot of like very complimentary stuff you said. And I guess I'm like,
I'll be rude later. I'll be rude later. You're a new
perfect.
Friend.
Perfect. Yeah. Because I'm going to be like phony modest. Like, oh, I'll do like Meryl Streep. Like, oh no, stop. but so, yeah, I mean, at least in my professional career, it's like, it's definitely been more creative. You know, my first career as a musician, songwriter, and then also went to law school. So in terms of kind of like, you know, doing the right left brain stuff, you know, I like doing the law because it's like, I like the challenge. I like learning a lot, you know, reading and writing, et cetera. But I am like at my core, I think an artist, which has taken me like kind of a really long time to feel comfortable saying, because it always felt like, oh, is it? But it's true. Like I'm most happy when I'm doing something creative and innovating. And
he's an artiste. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He was in the band Low Flying Jets, among many other bands. And
but you have to change the name after I was gonna say 7-Eleven, but you have to change the name after 9-11.
Ugh. No, we named it right after 9-11.
Oh wow.
We leaned into it.
Okay. Wow, cool. Cool.
Which at the time, like,
fear
you
us.
Know, it was in New York City also. So we formed in April 2002, and like, you know, I just remember having the conversations. We were coming up with band names, and we had some cool ones. Like, what were some ones that we were going to do? We were going to do, for a minute, we were we, like the French word for yes, O-U-I, we were we. We were like, oh, yeah, we. And then we were like, that's a little confusing. Doesn't really, like, it looked good on a flyer, but in general, it was like, oh, yeah, we're we. what else? We were Sex Tempo. Like, oh, that's
sex
cool.
Tempo.
But we were like, it was kind of like that, this elephant in the room thing. And you know, I think we debate on who actually said it, but whatever. We were like, I don't know, let's do it. And then we're like, yeah, like, let's just, Low Flying Jets it's a cool sounding name. And yeah, it's a little freaky right now. But there was, it was received both ways. Some people were like, oh, wow, it's a really cool name. And there were some people that were like, we're going to murder you for disrespecting the victims of 9/11. And we were like, I mean, it wasn't really. It was sort of like an artistic statement, but it certainly wasn't meant as like, you know, like to minimize it or anything. And, you know, I don't want to go off on a 9/11 tangent.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was an inside job, and Bush did it, and we get it. But
so that was one of the bands that I was in. You know, and continue to write. So like, you know, I co-written a song with a friend of mine that was featured in the first season of Bridgerton pretty recently. So like, that song went like. I want to say viral. It did go viral. We've got like 11 million streams or something.
What's it called?
The song is called The End, and the artist is Jay Poland. So Jessie Poland is originally from Wall, New Jersey. She's out in LA now. But we wrote the song in 2012.
Big as year part for of, you. You
know, we had written a bunch of songs together, and you know, we were getting like some commercial syncs and stuff. And this was one that was like really good, but never like it wasn't used in anything when we wrote it. And then like 10 years later, it was still on her reel, and a music supervisor reached out and was like, hey, there's a new show coming out on Netflix. You know, we want to use the song. We're like, great. And it ended up being Bridgerton, which became like a huge hit for Netflix. And the cool thing is that the song was the only song in the first season that had like vocals or lyrics. Like the rest of the music in Bridgerton was all string quartet arrangements.
That's awesome.
This was like an actual pop song that had like vocals and stuff. So the song went, it was like, you know, we were Billboard had like the number four song from TV and film in 2021. So like you can look it up. But it was like that. So, you know, I absolutely love writing, songwriting, music production, et cetera. That's like definitely my passion. But, you know, like 10 years later, that song hit in Bridgerton. It's like, all right, if I had one of those a month, I'd be like a pretty happy guy. But like sometimes it's like few or far between. And, you know, after a while playing music just with like the hustle stuff, I was like, I don't think I have like I'm not going to move to LA at age like, you know, whatever. And yeah, I'm really going to like pound the concrete and try to get the songwriting stuff going. And like, for now, like, you know, I do some pretty like cool stuff here and there, but my career led down, like, you know, I went to law school, et cetera. So
you need a rich dad these days, really, to be successful in a creative field, or at least that's what Sarah and I tell ourselves
every day. Yeah. It's really inspiring to know that like something that was just like online from 2012, because like I would say, Molly, that was also, I would say, glory days for us. It's nice to know that anything that you might have put online a long time ago that was good could always be successful. Yes. It's like sometimes we post stuff and we're like, I only got 40 likes, and then it's like, no, you know what, somebody might find the post that you posted 10 years later and be like, I can use this. And I think that's really inspiring.
Yeah. You know, Jeff was in Real Life Emojis as well. He was best boy and he had a cameo appearance. Speaking of things that went online in probably 2012.
Glory days.
So yeah, glory days.
It's true. Yeah. I was the skiing emoji.
Which they got rid of.
And now I'm second guessing if it ever even existed. I was just like, yeah, I'll bring my skis over.
Wait, they got rid of the skiing emoji?
I mean, was there really one?
Yes.
Yeah, there was a skiing emoji of just a guy with the skis with his knees bent, and they changed it because I tried to find it to send it to you like on your birthday or something one year, and it was gone.
It's here.
No, that's a different one.
Oh.
It doesn't look like me at all.
You dabble in different genres. You've got one of my favorite songs, Big Up the Nuge, by your rap alter ego, Penis Williams, if I may, on SoundCloud, if anyone wants to check that out.
Penis Williams Esquire.
It is a rap song tribute to New Jersey, basically just naming like all the towns and just really genius stuff. My favorite line, do you mind if I recite my favorite couplet from Big Up the Nuge?
Please.
Okay. I got a shorty in deal, she called my dick Yahweh, and when I bust a nutly, I do it the raw way.
Very good.
That is objectively the best line of the song, I think. I'm glad you mind that that gem. But I'll give you a little background on the tune. That I wrote that lyric first and then was like, I should just make a whole song about New Jersey and work in the names of towns in like, you know, a creative way or something. So the first line was, when I bust my nutly, I like to do it the raw way. And and if you listen to the song, for like the first verse, I was commuting from Asbury Park to Newark at the time. I was in law school. And when you listen to the first verse, you can tell that I wrote it like it goes geographically from Newark Penn Station
to
Asbury Park. So it's like, you know, there's like Rahway and there's just towns where like, why am I rapping about fucking Matawan? Like, you know, there's like, it's not like there's like a cultural center there or anything, but it's like, these are all just like train stations. So I was like, oh yeah, I got my battle on in Matawan. Won me a crown.
It's really good. I think you should put it on Spotify for real. Like,
no, I think it's going to be another viral sleeper from 2012 that pops off.
I have a lot of regrets in life.
Same.
I think that like there are times when I can listen to that stuff and it hits me right and I'm like, oh, this was pretty good, man, like this was funny, and I made the beats too. It wasn't like you know, I wasn't like downloading beats or anything, so like producing the beats from scratch, I was like, oh, this came out really good. Actually, DJ Adam Worth is on Big Up the Nuge doing the record scratching stuff,
also of Real Life Emojis.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, wow. You know, we've all collaborated for a long time.
Real life emoji is like the Degrassi of online
of Asbury Park
bangers. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to be like, yeah, we're like Spielberg, De Palma, and Lucas.
Right.
But yeah, like it's more like Degrassi, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, Drake is huge.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into the astrology. Here are the people we're going to be talking about, just to give a smattering before we really get into it. These are celebrities who share either all three of your big three or two out of three of your big three. It's a real murderer's row. Are you ready? Steve Jobs, James Taylor, Ansel Elgort, Marcel Pagnol, Chili from TLC.
Obvious.
Those are the five that match your big three. Now, the same people, the people who have the same Pisces, Sun, Aries, Moon as you, Rihanna, Will.i.am, Tom Petty, Benjamin Franklin, hugely famous celeb. Huge. And then the ones that share your Pisces, Sun, and your Virgo rising, Kurt Cobain, Bruce Willis, Chris Martin from Coldplay, and Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things.
Wow.
So, yeah, Jeff, what do you think about this list that we've just socked at you?
Some pretty heavy hitters.
Steve Jobs.
Ben Franklin.
Ben Franklin, yeah. Like, this is definitely a combo that doesn't really lend... It actually doesn't really lend itself to celebrity, if I may, because the only... like. You only have five that have your exact same big three, which is not that many. And most of them are not that famous. Like James Taylor, I actually obviously have heard his name a gazillion times, but I had to Google, like, why did people like James Taylor so much?
Are you serious?
Know? Yeah. And I, what, you love him?
Love.
Okay. What do you like him, Jeff? 70s singer songwriter for the listeners who don't know, James Taylor.
I respect James Taylor, and I think he's got an incredibly interesting story. Like, do I bump it in the car when I go out?
Okay,
like,
same.
No.
Yeah, no.
So like, right. Do I like James Taylor? I'm like, yeah, you know, I respect the shit out of him.
Yeah, to be clear, he's not on my playlist. He's not on my current playlist either, but I have love for him.
But he's right. He's also, you know, I can relate to, you know, he's someone, he has like some serious addiction struggles throughout his life and has like, you know, some wild stories about balancing this like insanity in his life, as well as being like exceedingly successful in what he was doing too. So, you know, I think like, do you want to hear like a really interesting, very short James Taylor story?
Yes, so, because I don't have anything interesting to say about him. So please.
All right.
Please,
well, do. whether this makes it into the final thing or whatever, because it's kind of a bummer of a story, but James Taylor wrote the song Fire and Rain. He went to rehab and he met a woman in rehab and they kind of like fell in love, and he got out a couple weeks before she was getting out, and they had plans where they were going to like move in together and like do the sober thing, and she committed suicide before she got out. So, and that's what the song Fire and Rain is about. And I'm like, that is such like a powerful statement. And then when you listen to the song, you're like, okay, so this is one of the best songs ever written. Like, it's like gut wrenching how like, you know, honest it is. And then, like, once you know the story and you hear it, you're just like, oh, my God, how did I not, like, how did I not, like, figure that story out without hearing the background? But, like,
right, like,
you know,
how
I
did
think
I not...
that he's definitely, like, generational songwriter for sure.
Do you know who else is a Pisces, though, Jeff? He's doesn't really share much else with you, but I know he's your least favorite Beatle is George Harrison.
So I'm, like, I'm evolving on that stance. I like,
how Pisces
I like
of you?
Harrison.
Do you want to know, Sarah, why... He said to me, I don't know why I remember this, but that he was your least favorite because he was a plagiarist, because he plagiarized famously, like two of his biggest hits were plagiarized and like found in court to be plagiarized, and he had to share royalties with other songwriters.
But he didn't share royalties. Instead, he used his vast wealth to just buy the entire catalog of the original artist, so that he wasn't sharing royalties. He just paid them out, but now the song belongs to him. That he plagiarized because he bought the rights to the original, which I don't think that's like a slimy move, right? Because he paid a lot of money for it. I do think it's really funny that you brought that up, though, because I almost mentioned that when we were talking about Big Up the Nuge, because you were like, I felt like I heard it before, like, you know, I listened to the song, I feel like I heard it. And I was like, well, George Harrison has like this really funny quote that, like, you know, a lot of times when you hear something great, you feel like you've heard it before, but you're not really sure. So I was going to like kind of drop that in there because that was sort of his defense when he got caught on the, you know, the song is My Sweet Lord and he ripped off He's So Fine.
I thought you were going to be like, George Harrison has this really famous quote. I got a shorty and deal. She called my dick Yahweh. When I bust a Nutley, I do it the raw way.
George Harrison said, getting blowies on the boat, we call that Bayhead.
But I also just, I don't know. I guess that stuck with me when you said that because I had never heard of someone disliking an artist on legal grounds before, like based on case law, which, and I think it was probably before you even became a lawyer. So that was really funny too, because in your chart and in your life, you are so creative and so, like, you know, being a lawyer, yeah, it definitely has a creative side. Being an entrepreneur has a creative side, but these are sort of considered to be two different sides of the brain, you know?
Well, I think that my original impetus for going to law school came from a place of being furious about people taking credit for other people's work. And without naming names, working with an artist really hard on something, the artist becoming successful, and all of the promises and all of the work that I had done on some demos and writing went unaccredited and uncompensated. And they hired a lawyer that basically like steamrolled me. I was still just like a kid in my apartment. And essentially that was the point where I was like, that's never going to fucking happen to me ever again. I'm going to law school. I'm going to do it and I'll do it myself.
Sarah, what astrologically explains this obsession with the dark underbelly of music legality?
Your sun sign represents the I am energy. It represents the essential nature of the light that you give off. It's your solar energy. So you radiate, and it's sort of a misnomer that you just are your sun sign. Actually, you develop into your sun sign more and more as you get older. You become the highest expression of your sun sign by the end of your life.
That's why George Harrison was so triggering to you, because he is a Pisces sun just like you, and he did the one thing that you can't stand, taking credit for other people's music, whether it was an accident or not.
I'm fully on board with that.
Your moon sign is your internal nature. It's what's really going on inside. It's what you need to feel comfortable. It's what you need to feel nurtured. It's what you're looking for on a heart level when it comes to feeling understood or even understanding yourself. Your moon sign, your inner nature, is in Aries, which is the first fire sign. It's the first sign of the zodiac. In fact, yesterday we had a huge eclipse in Aries, actually to the degree on where your moon is. So moon in Aries means that your inner nature actually is triggerable. So when you're like, I'm pissed at this thing, so I'm going to take the law into my own hands and I'm going to become a lawyer, so I'm never in this position again, and I'm going to be someone that you can't fuck with. Like, you're actually driven from a place that is oftentimes maybe sparked by perhaps the energy of like fight or anger or something triggers you where you're like, okay, I'm actually not this cutesy, all accepting we are one Pisces anymore. I'm an Aries moon, and I'm actually going to make sure that I'm able to advocate for myself and for people when I think something is right. You're passionate about being able to feel comfortable to step into the ring and fight if anything were to, you know, when the time called for. It's actually not comfortable for you not to feel taken care of personally.
It's funny that you share the Pisces sun Aries moon combo that she just mentioned with Rihanna, Tom Petty, Ben Franklin, and Will I Am. Like, one of these things is not like the others, and that's Will I Am. But
it's not Jeff Plate.
No, I think you make sense with Tom Petty, Rihanna, and Ben Franklin. Like,
I feel that,
right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, but Will I Am is the one in there where I'm like, he does the robot. I don't think any other Pisces that ever lived has done the robot.
I just wonder, like, does anyone really know Will I Am? Who dot is dot Will?
Will dot is an Aries moon. So he has I pronounced in the middle secretly, but in his whole name is like, I am, you know, but it's in the middle. I think that's sort of deep.
I don't know if it's deep. It's like, he definitely, He definitely thought of it in like fourth grade and was like, oh my God, this shit is genius.
He's like, yeah. I am like, Will.
Totally.
Will I am.
It's like, wait a minute. Hold the fort. This name is a sentence. Yeah. Is this a good time for an anecdote? Or I don't want to disrupt the flow of your chart reading.
Yeah,
there's no flow. There's no
flow. So yesterday was the eclipse. And so I'm watching the eclipse. I am still, you know, really good friends with my ex and my son's mother. So she stopped by to watch the eclipse because I live on the water and it's like a really good view of everything. So I was like, come over and watch the eclipse. So we did. It was nice.
Aww.
As the eclipse is happening, the power goes out. And like, I'm not a panicker. Like whenever something happens, I'm like in under fire. I'm like, all right, here's what we got to do. This is where we're going to go and how we're going to do it. Power goes out. I'm like, probably just like, you know, someone hit a light pole or something. Cause obviously there wasn't like, you know, crazy weather. When the power went out during the eclipse, I immediately got a feeling that was just like, shit. I was like, the entire East Coast of the United States probably just lost power. Like it's happening, people. Like this is it. But, so power was out for a big chunk of Monmouth County and it was really weird. So she went to her house and I was like, I'm going to go get our son from daycare. So I start driving, but the police response, anyway, I'll get to the point where society broke down where I live in Monmouth County in like less than 15 minutes, where people were doing like 70 miles an hour. Like the traffic lights weren't on. And normally like you just approach them cautiously and look to see if anyone's going to come. And maybe there's like an instinct to let someone go because they might have to pick their son up at daycare or something. None of that. People were like, I almost got ran off the road by somebody. People were bombing down the Route 36, like doing like easily 70 miles an hour through like blacked out traffic lights. Just it was mayhem. But to your point in terms of like, you know, how I approach, I guess like rules or whatever in those situations, like I'm trying to find a way to get across the highway because that's where my son's daycare is. And it was impossible. Like there was a couple cops, they just kept sending me back. And I'm like, at some point, so I found an intersection. There was no cops, there was cones, but I just went up over the grass median. And I was like, I have to get to where my son is going. So people are like honking the horn and losing their shit. And I was like, I don't fucking care. Come arrest me then. But at this point, if there's no plan in place for how to get someone from where they are to where they need to be, then I'm just going to go. Like
you're like OJ in the Bronco down 36.
I was like, come arrest me then. Like, come arrest me for going over this median to get to where I need to go. But like the takeaway to me was like in a situation like a big like power failure or something, our link to like ordered society is so tenuous that it literally took less than 15 minutes here for people to go absolutely feral and like, you know, abandon all social contract.
That is the most New Jersey shit I've ever heard. Everyone's driving 70 on beach highways. It's like, yo.
I actually don't think it's very Jersey. I think it's very like doomsday prepper. And it's really weird that mindset has really infiltrated the mainstream. Like, people are kind of openly doomsday prepping, even in a relatively chill place like, you know, the metropolitan area of New York City. I was in the nail salon a couple visits home ago, and the woman next to me was on the phone with her son doomsday prepping. Like, she was like, oh, yeah, make sure you have, you know, plenty of canned goods for the bunker and all this stuff. And I was like, we're doing this now in New Jersey?
Wow.
Like, I thought this was for like people who live in super rural areas who like, I don't know. It's
right, just, they can't run to the store.
Yeah, it's just the atmosphere of paranoia in America is really, really insane. And it's completely manufactured by just, I don't know, like fear and politics. Like nobody's doomsday prepping in Ireland. You know, they're just kind of, well, they wouldn't doomsday prep. It's sort of always like a mental doomsday.
But I feel like without getting too weird.
Please get weird. Weird is welcome here.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think that in countries like Ireland, that there is still some sense of responsibility to people and society, and not necessarily even altruistic, but just like a survival of like the herd that United States capitalism really doesn't afford for. Yeah. So like we have privatized everything to death, to the point where, you know, if it costs, you know, 2 cents more to make sure that the power grid is like safe for people in an emergency, if something were to happen, they're not going to do it because they'd rather have the 2 cents. And we do like that, that's, I think that's kind of the point where it's like, there was nothing in place. Like even the cops, it was every man for himself yesterday in such a short amount of time where it was just like, hey, I need to pick up my son. Like, fuck you, get out of here. Like, I'm going to Wawa to steal some ice. Like, it was just like, shit just went completely wild because power went out. And then, you know, the cell tower, I guess, was powered and it took a little while for service to come back. But for the first like 5 to 10 minutes of the thing, I didn't have cell service and I didn't have electricity. So I didn't know the extent to which like this event was happening. And it was like a very creepy feeling and no one responded well. You know what I mean? It's like, think back to school if you had a fire drill and the kids were just like yeeting each other out the window or something. Like that's how people responded. It was not a single file line. Like we did not make it to the parking lot in time. It was all around bad.
Rugged individualism creates really great entertainment and, you know, new business ideas. But in terms of like, when you pair it with hypercapitalism, that's where we're just running into some serious issues. Like Europe is kind of a charisma vacuum because they don't have this. I'm telling you, like I was listening to Springtime for Hitler, as I do, you know, like twice a week. And the part where he's saying heil myself when Hitler comes out and he's like, I'm the German Ethel Merman, don't you know? Like, it's all about entertaining. And I was like, no wonder this freaking guy, like they had never seen someone gesticulate before on this continent. Literally all he come up and raise his voice a little bit and like, just like bash on the gavel. And people are like, oh my God, what? This is a star. Like it's not surprising that he, you know, like that wouldn't have worked in America. Other shit works. Con artists work. We love a con man, but like just that, you know, having charisma and solely coasting on that to literally take over Europe. Like it's because everyone here, they've got tall poppy syndrome. I'm obviously generalizing, but like there isn't that thing. There is a great sense of community that's now missing, I think, in America, but it also can be a little bit oppressive in terms of like stay in your lane and don't ever, you know, do anything different.
Funny, do you stay in your lane in the case of this story? But
right. Can you tell us why this power outage happening right when Jeff's son needed to get home from daycare was the most, and during the eclipse in Aries was the most Aries moon thing ever to happen, specifically to Jeff Plate Esquire?
Yes. Really quick, I want to just say that I was sure that when you said I got a feeling that you were going to say tonight's going to be a good night.
Well, Will, I ain't. So that's not my line.
Oh, shit.
That was majorly on my wedding do not playlist. Majorly.
Now, why was this so astrologically perfect during the eclipse? So no matter what, every time the moon is in Aries, and especially when there's a new moon in Aries or a full moon in Aries, you are super activated because your moon is in Aries. I think what's interesting is that during the Aries eclipse, where the moon in Aries, of which planet you come from, was eclipsing the solar energy in Aries, which is, you know, sort of like the moon moves into the shadow of the sun, and all of a sudden we're all we're all just sitting there in the darkness with our shadows, hypothetically. And I think it's interesting that when the eclipse led to, not led to, but when there was an eclipse and then this power outage, that actually you like jumped into Aries moon mode in the eighth house. It's your eighth house represents like merged life. It's the merging of your life with someone. So even if it's your ex-wife or your son, it's like these are the people that you've merged your life with. And so all of a sudden, when there might be some kind of a catastrophe, you can't reach anybody. You become Will Smith in what was the zombie one where, you know, you were like, I gotta, like, you just were like, I'm going to get my son. And then, you know, you're trying, you're doing everything you can. The traffic is crazy. The police are inefficient. And you're like, okay, fuck it. Fuck it. I'm going live. Fuck it. I'm going on the medium. I'm going on the medium. Because it was like, no, Aries moon, at the end of the day, when you have a mission, and especially when you're seeking to feel safe, and now especially that you like have a son, part of you feeling safe is your kid being okay. So you're like, fuck the rules, you know. And it's funny too, because the energy of, we didn't get to yet, your rising sign, you're a Virgo rising. Virgo risings tend to appear to the world and lead in the world in a very practical but appropriate, like Virgos are very appropriate. They're competitive, they're practical, but they're, it's a very intellectual sign. It's a very analytical sign. It's very much into the details and dotting the I's and crossing the T's. But I think what we saw during the eclipse was like, okay, your moon is activated. You're like, I'm going to get my kid. I don't know if it's appropriate or, you know, thoughtful or intellectual to hop this median, but ultimately it's the only practical thing that you could do to actually just get your needs met, which is to get your kid in case something really was going on. Like your Aries moon, even if your Virgo rising likes to like know the law and like come meet, greet the world with an intellectual and sort of not, how do I want to put it? Like an intellectual and sort of like, I think Virgo has like fix it energy. Like I'm going to fix it. Like you're kind of like you being like, I have this, I have that, come to my house. I'm still friends with my ex. Virgos are very good at keeping things going, keeping the machine moving, fixing things. Pisces suns are very creative. They can actually be a little wishy-washy, a little bit sort of, or Pisces energy in general can be sort of like flowery. But when it comes down to it, Aries moon is like, fuck it. I got to do what I got to do. Fuck the rules. Sorry if I'm offending. And ultimately it was the only practical thing to do, even if it was actually illegal. And now because you got a law degree, even if they did try to come at you, like you promised your younger self, if anyone tries to fuck with me legally again, I'm going to know how this shit works. And so you actually set yourself up for success. And I think if anything, you know, eclipses are almost like, timeline reset. They're fate points. So there could be something that you learned about yourself in the chaos of the New Jersey power down eclipse moment where you were like, wow, yeah, like, I know, I hope you felt like Liam Neeson for a second, like, no matter where you are, I will find you.
I literally said that. I was like, I literally said that. I was like, I'm today, I was like Liam Neeson. I was like,
yeah.
And then whatever the other one, I'm not, like, there was the Mel Gibson movie too, where he was like, give me back my son. And I was kept running through my head, but I was not like Mel Gibson at all.
I hope that you felt that this was like the birth of your inner action star, and maybe moving forward, you know, if anything, I hope you can keep it in your pocket and like have a little confidence that you just are that you're the Liam Neeson of Monmouth County. And like, everybody knows it now, and all the law, all the police force fears you.
Well, I hope that's true, because I feel like the past year I have been somewhat like
fuck
stuck
those guys.
And not like really like using some of the like skills and stuff that I have, where I've just sort of been like in a little bit of a like complacent space where just sort of like just getting by and like, all right, well, this is that. And there's a number of reasons for that. I mean, you know, a lot of like big life changes and stuff. And it was like, all right, well, let me just get some like, you know, terra firma under my feet. But I have been feeling like pretty recently that it's like, no, dude, like, come on, like you do things, like you're a person that like can do stuff and make things happen, and you kind of haven't really been doing that. So maybe like get your shit together and start doing stuff.
Me too. I'm going through the same thing.
Okay, so Molly's a Pisces rising, so you guys are opposite rising, which means actually in many ways you can have a pretty good partnership, because the way that Molly appears is actually kind of who you are in relationship, and the way that you appear is actually in many ways how Molly likes to do relationships. So of course he was in your emoji video, you know. But Pisces energy right now is having a specifically difficult time because the planet Saturn, which rules boundaries, blocks, restrictions, oftentimes that feeling of stagnation is related to wherever Saturn is in the chart. So Molly's rising is, there's a Saturn transit on Molly's rising. Jeff, there's a Saturn transit on your sun. So for you both to feel blocked, Molly, about how you're able to like show up in the world, and Jeff about like you actually using all of your gifts and doing things, or feeling like you should be, but you can't. That's a very, that there's a Saturnian lesson that you're both learning how to work within certain boundaries, blocks, restrictions. Sometimes Saturn can lead to feelings of depression, or can lead to feelings of just like a can't do attitude. Saturn can make us feel. So if you guys have both been feeling that, it's because Saturn has been moving through Pisces. And so, you know, when Saturn moves out of Pisces, it'll be in, check in with me. You might actually start to feel a bit better, because on a solar level, at least for you, Jeff, and on a rising level for you, Mal, there's just going to be a relief, but there hopefully have been lessons learned in this downtime. Like there are lessons for you in this murky, I don't know, or in this slow, things should be moving faster, but they can't be moving faster time. On the eclipse, Mars was conjunct planet Saturn. Jeff, your planet Mars, the planet of action, drive, fight, fire, what gets you to drive over medians, you're having an exact Mars return. Your Mars is in Pisces. So Mars in the sky is on your Mars. So it's activating your inner fight with Saturn. If anything, maybe the lesson for you was like, okay, maybe when I'm feeling like I'm like a loser, that I don't do enough, or I'm feeling low or just hard on myself, it's like, actually, maybe what we learned is when it comes down to the people that you love, especially your children, child, but who knows, life's a journey, you know, but I don't know if you have more than one child, but you know, when it comes down to it, like actually what highly motivates you are the people in your life that you love. And actually you were launched into action when your Mars returned to Mars. And it's like, sometimes Pisces can be a hard energy because it's very nebulous. It's very, again, like it could be rain one minute, it could be condensation the next, it can be steam, it can go to the top of the mountain, then it drips down, and then a frog drinks it, you know? So it's like the whole Pisces water journey is very bleh. But when Mars returns to your Mars in Pisces, it's crystal clear what needs to be done, and there's no hesitation. So I think maybe there's a lesson there in just like what actually motivates you, no matter what, when things really are kind of heavy and dark. Like, no, at the end of the day, you will blast into action using a certain set of skills.
Pisces is also very much the get fucked up sign, FYI. Like that was George Harrison, that was James Taylor.
The crunkest sign of the zodiac for sure.
The crunkest sign, yeah. Rihanna, obviously. Which brings us to, let's talk Pisces Sun, Virgo rising, Kurt Cobain. Big one. Love to get fucked up.
Yeah.
That's what, certainly pretty one much. Way to put it.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, so this past year, I've quit drinking. That was like a big part of my exit from the brewery as well, was like, you know, moving on and sort of closing a chapter in my life and being like, okay, so this is something that I can absolutely leave behind.
Cool.
Not serving me or my family whatsoever. So that, you know, is a big part of like figuring out, all right, well, how do I approach life the same way when, you know, getting fucked up was such a big part of how I approached it previously, like forever. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's another thing that I'm kind of like figuring out, where it's like, all right, so then how do I bring my, whatever you want to call them, gifts, talents to bear? Like, you know, I'm not going out and like performing music. I'm not, you know, most of my like business stuff was done in like bars too. So launching a beer brand and sort of like taking all my meetings at accounts and bars and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just like very much in like a transitional phase where I feel that like the foundational work is like coming to a close in terms of, like I said, like getting solid ground under my feet and just sort of like, you know, being like a person first. But now I'm like, all right, well, I'm feeling that, but I also am like, okay, well, I'm a person, but I'm also a person that can like do things, and I want to, you know, I don't necessarily want to like I didn't get sober to like eke by and like survive. Like I got sober to enjoy life in like a really robust and meaningful way. And I mean that, you know, personally, professionally, et cetera, the whole thing. I will say this, and it didn't occur to me until we started talking a little bit, like this is before the earthquake and before Cheesequake, before Molly was like, hey, I shouted you out, you should come on the podcast.
But put you on the map.
So yeah, before putting me on the map. But so I mentioned to you guys that I'd not had like my astrological chart read before. This is my first time doing it. For some reason last week though, and this is no shit, like I felt compelled to do it and I Googled it. And like I entered my birthday in the time, like I started to do it. And then it was like, for $19.99 a month, get your full chart. And I was like, oh, fuck this. So I just like bailed on it. But like, I kind of forgot that I did that until we started talking. And then I was like, oh, that is kind of weird. Like something compelled me to look into like I don't really read like zodiacs, you know, no offense, none taken.
You shouldn't. No. Zodiacs are the reason everybody's like horoscopes are bullshit is because it is the way that. Your sun sign is a mere player in the stage of your psyche and your life. It's like, so when you read solar astrology, it's not, I mean, if anything, when you read zodiac, read for your moon sign and your rising sign. It's going to be much more on a deeper level helpful for what's going on. That's for everybody. Your sun sign is the sun sign is just the most obvious. It's like sort of the Gregorian approach to zodiac because it's like, this is our calendar and the sun is showing everything. And it's very sun. Like we live in a very solar focused society, whereas the ancients, the Jews and the tribal peoples from all places, henceforth Yorn, all used the moon as a calendar and as a tracking system. So it's sort of solar astrology is like cool, but it's almost obvious. It's like being like, there's grass on the ground in Florida. And it's like, yeah, that you could say that about everywhere, you know? And it's like, well, okay, that's how people talk about astrology. It's like sort of the obvious stuff. Whereas actually the moon sign is your internal level and the rising sign is how you experience and see the world and how the world experiences and sees you sort of on first brush. So it's like kind of what you're leading with. So I think if anything, for anybody listening who's like, zodiacs are bullshit. I'm just a friend of Jeff's. I wanted to hear him as he puts on the map, Space Trash Podcast. Check out if you're gonna
not
read your
Jeopardy.
Horoscope. Jeopardy Schmepperty, Space Trash Podcast, baby.
Jeopardy Schmepperty.
But no, yeah, I mean I also
not
think
Jeopardy Schmepperty.
Well, I also think okay, so something I wanted to tell you as you were speaking is what I also find fascinating is on the Space Trash Podcast, again, I'm sure that you're an avid listener, even though you don't even know what the fuck we're talking about. But so I'll break it down real quick. Everybody in their chart, and actually when we have eclipses, what we're experiencing is the crossing of the nodes, the axis, the eclipse's axis is the lunar nodes. And everybody in your chart has a north node and a south node. So like this Aries new moon eclipse was conjunct, meaning the same place as the north node in Aries right now. So we're all on a collective level being asked to kind of let go of toxic relationship and, you know, bullshit, superficial Libra stuff from days past and really lean into personal warriorship and really get real. Like if we're fighting in bullshit relationships, is that worth it? Maybe not. And really redefining what is worth fighting for first and foremost. You know, moon and Aries, your sobriety and your actual, I think, recollection and remembering of yourself. Right now, we also have the planet Mercury, which represents thinking and communicating and sort of how the technical processes work on a communicative functional level on Earth and within us. We have Mercury retrograde right now. So there is a rethinking of all things Aries and self in your chart. This is happening right on your moon in your eighth house of Scorpio in the eighth house. It's not unconscious. It's actually stuff that we shield from people. It's stuff we hide or stuff that is not necessarily for public consumption. It's private. The eighth house is the, you know, I always say like the seventh house is marriage and the eighth house is like what happens after you get married. Like there's like your wedding and then there's like a marriage. So a marriage isn't in the seventh house. That's your wedding. A marriage is in the eighth house. That's where you're merging with other. And there are things that are private between either you and another person. So you're really rethinking. I would invite you, and then I'll tell you my really exciting thing about your notes, but what I would invite you from a clinical perspective is an astral clinical perspective is maybe it's less about figuring anything out and more about remembering, you know, who you were, who you are, you know, if you can, who knows, 11, when did you start partying, you know, but just remembering the kid, that inner child that actually probably was a really creative, you know, balls to the walls, party bro, before we even knew that we could abuse substances, you know, like you could still be a party bro without partying in the traditional sense. Like you actually are here to bring people together and have good times and share your gifts with the people and the world. Specifically in your chart, your north node, meaning where soul.
Sarah, sorry, we're going too deep into his chart and not as much into the celeb stuff.
I'll just say this for a personal reading for Jeff, and then we can cut that from the podcast. But I want to tell you that, Jeff, your north node is in Leo, in the 11th house, the fame house, the part of you that,
oh my God,
for whatever reason, even if you feel like, okay, Molly had a baby, you're going on Jeopardy, bro. Like, you're doing, that's like pretty much doing something. I mean, lol. And even to have like the confidence to apply for Jeopardy, let alone go on it and either be great or not, is actually bringing you back to a place of remembering what you're here to do, which actually is play in the world and make the in public and make music and make art and be seen for the kind of joyful kid that you maybe were before you started hitting the bottle.
He's a star. He's a star. You're right. You were right to bring up the Leo North Node. I'm sorry. I doubted you. But I want to get into the Virgo rising celebs because I want to know what Jeff and Chris Martin and Millie Bobby Brown have in common. But before we do that, real quick, Jeff, we didn't even ask you, how was Jeopardy?
It was such an amazing experience. So first of all, like, huge Jeopardy fan since I was a little kid. One of those things, like, one of those people that watches it every night. And then even as I got older, like, would DVR it and like come home from the bar and watch it at like 2 a.m. So like, there were blocks of, you know, years, over a decade, where I didn't miss one. So it was like Jeopardy every night. So having said that, obviously, like, really big fan.
But also, like, so talk about experience, having exactly what I just said real quick. Childhood dreams fulfilled. Like, actually, you're exactly who you are. And also the most Virgo rising shit I've ever heard. Like, I would actually, after the bar, come home and pop on a good Jeopardy. Like, you sound like me with Law and Order SVU. You're like, not an episode goes missed. Like, it's like, lol. But like, really, that's what this eclipse is about. It's remembering, it's healing a certain, for everybody, it's healing like an inner childhood wound, or picking up a project that we thought we failed at or had died, but actually had just been there the whole time. We were just learning other lessons and on a different timeline. But actually, I think it's beautiful that you went on Jeopardy. And actually, this was like a childhood dream of yours.
It's true. No, it really was. And I think that's a great way to put it. So the experience itself was just like, you know, and maybe it was exactly what I needed it right at the right time. Because it was just like unreal. So I can't, the problem with the timing of this is like, I really can't talk about like how it went until the episode airs. You know what I mean?
We'll,
so like,
we'll have to have you back. We'll have to have you back.
We could do like a recap or something.
You issue a press release.
Yeah. So I can't really discuss too many like details of the actual filming.
What I'll say is this: I do believe. Are you in a spa robe right now?
I'm in like a really big hoodie.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I thought I was gonna say like maybe it's a hint that he's sitting here at the Cheesequake Service Center, lounging in a spa robe. But okay.
Yeah. So I'd say I'm doing pretty good. If I'm at Cheesequake in a robe, I'm doing pretty good.
I thought this was the King of New Jersey.
No, it's funny.
Back.
It's like it's a new hoodie, but I'm not a small person. But this hoodie, I put it on. I was like, I look like Ariana Grande right now. Like, this is the biggest hoodie I've ever owned by far.
Need a lollipop.
But it's pretty nice. I did. I did.
Get him a lollipop and Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
So Jeopardy, right. Yeah. Like, you guys will just have to tune in on April 17th.
Someone has to give me a login to something. How do you watch Jeopardy on the internet these days?
Oh, I'll give you my logins.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I was unable to crack that code in like, you know, it's just on TV here. And I'm still like, I'm in an age where like, I'm too old to get rid of cable, but I'm too young to not also pay for all the streaming services. So I'm like, I pay for cable and I pay for every streaming service. And it's the stupidest of both worlds. So
you.
Like I watched Jeopardy and I DVR it, so I was able to watch them like that. But like when I was studying, trying to find like, oh, where can I just stream like episodes? It's not really like, it's not a thing. And
One of my old writers at Newsweek used to cover Jeopardy all the time because people are Googling what's going on with the hosts every single day, and he would cover stuff that was so mundane and it would get like, you know, six figures worth of hits. So
that's fascinating.
And he was British and he was in the UK. I'm actually going to write him an
email.
Well,
Jeopardy is wildly popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from like.
So good.
Yeah. Like, so obviously there's like a prestige thing about it because it's like, it's difficult. But from like a ratings perspective, it's like a really popular show globally. So,
well, because I think everybody can feel really good, like sitting at home, being like, "Got it!" Like in front of some, you know, especially like if you're with people, you're like, "I got it. Oh, who got it? I got it." It's like you
well,
can
that's
feel
like,
at
and
home,
that's
like,
the
oh,
tension.
I got it.
Like that's like the tension with the writers, where it's like we have to come up with questions that are hard enough for people to be like, "Wow, Jeopardy is hard," but totally. Also you want people at home to get them and compete and want to come play, etc. So. You know, they're being part I can talk about this, being part of the contestant pool, they test questions out on you and they're like, you know, take this test. We just want to know how people do, because they have like a general idea of like the level of skill that the people in the contestant pool have. So if they're submitting questions and you're getting like 2 out of 50 right, they're like, all right, these questions are too hard. We have to go back and rewrite them. And on, you know, vice versa, if everyone's getting all of them right, they're like, okay, these are a little too dumbed down. We got to step it up a little bit. So that was like an interesting part of the process too, like testing out questions and stuff.
I was gonna say, Molly, I feel like you'd crush on Jeopardy.
Oh yeah, I think I probably would.
I think you would. Yeah,
I want to try.
Have you taken the online test?
No, but I will. You know what? I would crush at Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That shit is so easy. And you know that game, You Don't Know Jack? I used to do really good at that. I like dated this guy freshman year at Rutgers who was like, do you want to play You Don't Know Jack? And I was like, yeah, I'll kill you. Like, you don't understand.
You don't know Jack. Jack.
I will fucking kneecap you in 3 seconds. And I did. And he was like, let's play again. And I did it again. And I was like, you're an idiot. But I'm inspired to try. And Jeff, I can't wait to see how you did. I'm sure like you did amazing. And I cannot wait to see. It's going to be so cool.
Yeah, it is. I'm really excited. When I got the promo photos and was finally able to post, I was like, oh, that's so cool. You know,
yes.
Like you kind of get like lost in the experience a little bit. And like, cause it also like it, they shoot like 6 episodes a day. So it like the process was also somewhat like grueling, where I was like, you know, I should have like trained in the gym as well as like practice the trivia, because there, I was like, there's like a physical component to this, like having like the energy to last, like, you know, it's a 7 a.m. call. And the last episode, you know, I don't think I left the lot until like 6:45 p.m. or something. So it was like a solid and like not, it's like downtime, but you're also with a bunch of like Jeopardy nerds. So like it's like taxing.
So you're saying you made it through several episodes?
I'm not saying shit. I'm just saying that it was a grueling day.
What?
And it was just like, but it like walking onto the stage and everything, like seeing the stage and like the game board and stuff, it was just like, holy shit, like I am on Jeopardy. So crazy.
And I think it's the first of what maybe many exciting stages you walk on to moving forward.
I think so.
Prediction-wise, if you choose to live your soul's purpose.
And I do. And I am choosing to live my soul's purpose. But I will say this, and I forget who like coined the phrase, but something about like the melancholy of achievement when I definitely had like a letdown period, because like for months and months, it was like, I'm going to be on Jeopardy. I'm going on Jeopardy. And then I was on Jeopardy.
Right.
Now what?
Totally get that. Yeah.
Like yeah. What so me thinking about, you know, professionally, like, well, what's the next thing? Then it was like, all right, well, what else? Like, I did it and now it's over. And it was something that I wanted like so bad and did it and achieved it. And then there's that melancholy of achievement where it's like, well, I did it and I'm still me and I'm still like.
But I'll say this, you're you who is a Pisces. Your sun is in Pisces, also your Mars and your Venus. I think, if anything, that melancholy is why Pisces are the best musical artists. Like maybe a little song about post Jeopardy come down is what the doctor ordered.
I think they all have been, even back to Big Up the Nuge. There's a little bit of
it's melancholy.
Post Jeopardy
sure.
Come down in everything I've written.
Come down, C-U-M, in that song. But, that was like, it was a little boy watching you with the sock, tube sock, and just jerking it. But I would say that, I mean, why does Pisces not only love the spirits, but also spirits? Because it actually carries like an ancient, that a deep sense of melancholy. Like it, there's beauty, but it's also beauty in the breakdown, and it's death. It's a mutable sign. So for Pisces, like baseline is always going to be on some level an awareness of the melancholy and birth and death and the endings of things. So I think if anything, that's, and but thank God, because without it, we wouldn't have movies or music or anything that actually moves us as listeners or viewers.
I have a lot of insight into that, and I don't know that this is necessarily the forum for it, but like I can certainly, you know, relate to what you're saying. But it is that for sure. And I think it just outlines, though, that it's just sort of like, you know, everything in life is like, it's just transient. So
yeah, nothing's permanent. You know,
It is really like, you know, things just shift and change, and, you know, you are who you are throughout it. And the Jeopardy thing was like, you know, it's just super interesting, because like, I don't identify myself as like a Jeopardy fan before this, or now a Jeopardy contestant.
Wow. Talk about not being able to see yourself though. Like, okay, maybe you weren't a Jeopardy contestant before you were, but you are, as far as I know, the biggest Jeopardy. You were stumbling home from highway bars, putting on the DVR. You're the biggest freaking Jeopardy fan, Jeff. See yeah. yourself. Meet Jeff. Jeff, meet Jeff. He loves Jeopardy, and he's actually on it.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
And after the episode, we will hear Jeff's new pop banger coming down from that Jeopardy high.
It's true.
Let's get out of here soon, but let's do Virgo Rising. Our list again of Pisces Sun Virgo Risings is Kurt Cobain, Bruce Willis, Chris Martin, Millie Bobby Brown, and Sharon Stone. So what's
also, I believe Chopin.
That tracks as well. This is a really interesting conversation, because Pisces is so artistic and Virgo is so analytical and perfectionist. I'm surprised there's not more people on this list who have become famous, but I guess they've all just driven themselves insane.
I was going to say the exact same thing. These people have all probably driven themselves completely insane with the perfectionism, self-image stuff. Yeah, it's an interesting combination, right?
Yeah.
Well, we have to understand that Virgo, real quick, Virgo rising means that that's the beginning of your identity. That means the opposite part of that in your chart where your relationship starts is in Pisces. So anybody that has a Virgo rising and a sun in Pisces, their sun in Pisces is in the relationship part of their chart. So I think what might happen sometimes is like, okay, rising with analytical perfection and focus on what you think are the right things actually ends up making relation. That's why I think relationships is a big conversation for you and for all people that are, you know, Virgo risings with Pisces suns, because it's like their sense of identity actually lives in the house of connection with other. And yet sometimes that Virgo perfectionism rising, when used in the right way, it's like, I'm getting my sun. I have a unique set of Virgo rising, Pisces sun, Aries moon that allows me to get my sun or whatever, Liam, unique set of big three. But I think in a lot of ways, it's like where it gets kind of like the opposite, they're opposite ends of the spectrum. So Virgo is exacting. Pisces is sort of blurry, you know, watery and unclear about the edges. And that is where no matter how perfect you appear or are how responsible you are in the world in relationships, it can get a little bit like blotto.
I have the same issue because I'm a Pisces rising and a Pisces north node with a Virgo south node. So this is also where I live, Jeff, in this tension between like being a kooky, crazy artist and a psychotic perfectionist who's like, I always say I'm like the guy on Boardwalk Empire, Michael Shannon, when he's whipping himself in the back with the belt. Like that's my Virgo side. I'm just like, it's horrible and painful.
In relationships, it'll come out different though, because you appear like you're rising as that Pisces artist, fashion, gorgeous. But when you get into relationships, you're actually like, here's how we do, like we're throwing out the old food or not. Like you're more meticulous when it comes to how you do a relationship.
I know, it's really so annoying. I feel so bad for everyone. I really
I'm
do.
Grateful. I like
every day
relationship with you, Mal.
Every day since I left New Jersey, I'm like, I was so hard on my parents when I was home.
Oh
my God, so hard on them. I was like, is wrong with you? Why can't you put the dishes in the dishwasher? Like crazy shit.
Right, right.
Jeff, what do you think about Chris Martin from Coldplay? I want to know.
Swings a little above his weight, kind of middling songwriter.
And how does he do that with this Pisces Sun Virgo rising combo? He punches, as we would say in Ireland. He punches above his weight romantically and professionally.
So he's got to be privately really funny.
You think?
Probably.
Would be my
guess. Yeah, I do.
Is that he's probably just like a really funny person. And it's nice to spend time with him because, I mean, I don't think he's like exceedingly attractive or necessarily like, I mean, Coldplay is a huge band, right? At one point, they were like the biggest band in the world. I'm hard pressed to name like a song.
You don't like.
So I can do that. But I like, I don't know what the name of that song is.
Yellow. It was all yellow.
That was, oh, Yellow. That was the first one. And then there's one, I do know Clocks because there was like an instrumental version that was on an infomercial that was always on. It was like, it was like yoga music or something. And one of them was like Clocks by Coldplay. So I know that that's one of them too. No, I just, you know, they're not, there's like bands that come out, like I think U2 is like a good comparison to Coldplay.
Totally.
Kind of live in the same like milieu.
But U2 has
like some songs that are their own identity, right? Like they're like, there's huge U2 songs and you know them. But Coldplay to me was just like a huge band, but I don't know. Their songs kind of run into each other a little bit. I don't want to get into a music critique, but I will say this.
It makes sense, though, I tend to think that when Virgo risings put their mind to something, and especially when it has to do with the Pisces sun energy, like the creative arts, they're going to figure out how to be successful if that's what they choose, because whatever Virgos put their mind to, they fucking do. Like, so, I think now that you're not drinking, you're going to find if you wanted musical success, it might come faster and easier than ever before, because it actually might have been getting washed down a little bit with the whiskey. Whereas actually I think Chris Martin, like a Pisces sun Virgo rising, has a unique ability to get the to channel the creative and then present it correctly for the world.
So like getting back to Chris Martin, I think he's really crafty. Like I think that he is
Virgo,
like
crafty,
masterful at crafting these tunes where the things that excite me personally about music are like, you know, is it novel? Is it like honest? Is it something I've never heard before? And then I kind of lose interest in things that are really, really well done, but not necessarily like reinventing the wheel. So that's where I'm coming from with that. And not in any way like a critique of Chris Martin and his talent in the band, because they're, you know, obviously.
Well, the thing is Coldplay is completely sexless. It's completely like Lady Macbeth, unsex me. They are just, there's not really an appeal. It's just like you can play this in Duane Reed and it will be fine. Like that's kind of the whole project, you know?
I think that's like two ways to say the same thing, right? Because there are, you know, they probably spent $1 million recording the last Coldplay record and it sounds great. And then there are songs that someone has recorded like on their iPhone that elicits like so much stronger of an emotional response because of the honesty, vulnerability, or like it's a novel approach to something. So like, I mean, that's sort of the stuff that moves me in listening to music. Chris Martin, though, is, I think, you know, he has accomplished like so much based on, to me, like I have respect for people that aren't necessarily like a Janis Joplin or a Bob Dylan or someone where you're just like, as soon as you see and hear them, you're like, oh, like some greater spirit is speaking through this person. Like they were just born to like do this. And there's some kind of like intangible thing. And that, like Kurt Cobain is a perfect example as well, where it was right. Like, you know, you just hear his voice and you're just like, oh, all right, this person is from like another planet. Like they're bringing something to us that has not existed before, is solely through them. And, you know, now I'm connected to it. Chris Martin doesn't bring that, but he's worked his ass off to get to where he is without that. Like, so, you know, which is more esteemable, whatever, you can kind of debate it, I guess. But
This is what we say about Taylor Swift all the time. Like, we're just like, yeah, she's doing it and she's doing a really good job. And it doesn't move me or Sarah, but it does, like, a lot of people really love it and she works really hard. And like, I know people who've been in the studio with her and they're like, she's the real deal. She's like, you know, really, works hard, I guess. So yeah, it's the same kind of thing.
They have what I struggle with on every level, which is the ability to just like go evergreen, like basic, go evergreen.
Right.
Like lowest common denominator.
Brand safe.
Yeah.
Clean comedy. Like, I won't ever be able to. I literally will not ever be, like, I sabotage things because I can't do that. Like, I'm just like, I can't work in this job because I'll come up with 50 reasons. But the real reason is, like, I can't send out a stupid tweet. You know what I mean?
Out a stupid tweet, but yet it's not dumb enough that all the masses get it. So it's a really, really dumb tweet. It's still not evergreen.
What about
I got a lot of jokes that I'm the only person laughing. I'm like, come on, guys, this is funny.
No,
I spent
that's not
a lot
true.
Of time making that Punxsutawney Time in Hollywood poster. I don't know. It was right around Groundhog's Day, and like I took the poster from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and made them all groundhogs and called it Punxsutawney Time in Hollywood. And like, I was like, this is hilarious. And everyone across the board,
Sarah just fell in love.
Like, everybody was just like, I don't get it, dude. It's not funny. I'm like, no, you're not hearing it yet.
I get it.
Punxsutawney Time in Hollywood.
I think it's very funny. And there's actually a clip that I repost every year from our first year of doing this podcast that I think is the funniest thing ever. I actually spent time like clipping it up and like putting graphics and stuff. No one has ever liked it. I think the reel has like 4 views and it's just me watching it and posting it 4 times since. I think it's the funniest thing ever, but it's a clip about Groundhog Day and Molly revealing to me that actually it's not real. And
she thought the groundhog really did like control when winter would end. Like, she didn't know that it was just for fun, like a silly little tradition. She
thought it was like an ancient tradition that people were like gathering in their like colonialist clothing, like because of how accurate it was, and they were honoring the tradition of the groundhog.
What do you mean?
I thought it was real. I thought it was real. I'll send you the clip. You won't laugh at it, but I think it's really funny, and I love anything Groundhog Day humor because I find it to be a fascinating cultural real event.
All right, let's wrap this up with a really quick discussion of Steve Jobs, because he is your alpha and omega chart twin to me, because he's Pisces Sun, Aries Moon, Virgo Rising, and I don't know, he just, out of the ones that we had, it was him, James Taylor, Ansel Elgort, Marcel Pagnol, who was a very talented, you know, multidisciplinary French guy who was most successful in film, but a lot of other stuff too. You learn about him in film school, and Chili from TLC. Out of all these people, Steve Jobs to me is from the Jeff Plate school of people. I don't know.
So I think if I had, like, if I was the founder of a computer company, I probably would resemble Steve Jobs in a lot of ways. Like, there definitely, like, there are instances where I felt like really comfortable doing what I was doing professionally, right? And one of them was like producing like other bands and artists. So I mentioned I worked with a lot of like female artists, and I worked with like a number of bands too. And like, I think that in that area where I knew that I was like, we were producing good stuff. I wasn't like making money hand over fist, but I knew the work was coming out really good. And I definitely felt as though we were like harnessing something like Steve Jobs in a way where it was like, you know, hey man, like we've had like 3 sessions so far and we haven't even recorded anything yet. And I was like, well, just trust my process, because right now the bonding that we're doing is going to make the recording that much easier. So instead of getting into the studio and just start like, you know, picking out amps and mic chains and stuff, like we're just going to like hang out and like drop acid together. And then in a week when we get the guitars and everything, we're already so like the vibe is so strong that it's only going to take us, you know, 8 hours to track like 6 tunes, and we're going to be like, wow. So in things like that, I was like, oh, that's kind of like, I mean, but also looking back on it, I was just kind of like doing acid with a bunch of like new friends. Like, yeah, but the work was coming out good. All this to say that I do tend to think that I can bring, like, you know, some creative ideas to a process maybe that doesn't necessarily lend itself to that. I have no idea what I'm saying right now.
Well, I think many thoughts. I think your creative process sounds delightful. Ben. No, but what I think, like, so for me, when I think of Steve Jobs, like, so we don't know each other. This is our first meeting, but I feel like I do just because of the inevitability of big up to the jurors or
but big up the Nuge.
Big up the Nuge. But like Steve Jobs, for example, is the epitome of this chart because he's a Virgo rising. What did he do? He wore the same practical outfit every day. There was no thought put into it other than this is the most efficient way to dress so that I can actually create the most space for my creative work. His whole thing was like, I want to give every person a personal handheld computer. But that is such an Aries moon thing to really value every person. But especially, he was probably like, I want a little handheld computer. And then he was like, I can do this for everybody. Everyone might want that. And everyone says it's impossible, but I'm a Pisces creative. So I know that if I want something, I can make it for myself and other people, especially if I take the thinking out of fashion. And true. I think his look allowed people to trust him because he was so just, he had a uniform. And as a result, I think that, like, that Virgo uniform offset a lot of, it helped people trust him when he actually was probably coming to a lot of meetings with what at the time seemed like crazy ideas.
Well, I think that speaks a lot to like his eye for design as well, right? So, you know, kind of in going back to like some of the music stuff we were talking about where, you know, someone like Chris Martin might be like, what were those things called? What was the MP3 player?
Zune.
Like a lot of features, a lot of work put into like, how is this going to play? How is that going to play? Whereas the Steve Jobs is like, strip it all down, like make it as like straightforward and just the essence of the thing as possible. And that is what's going to resonate with people. Like, don't let them, you know, like, we're not going to customize it. We'll come out with three colors. That's about as customizable as you're going to get with it or, you know, whatever it is. I think that, like, you know, I think designers call it honesty of materials, where it's like, don't make something look like a wood block unless it's made out of wood. You know what I mean? Like, so I think a lot of that thought went into it.
I get what you're saying because I love how I think the Coldplay comparison is very apt because he was not a Coldplay Chris Martin guy. He was a Kurt Cobain guy. And I think that's like sort of the essence of what we're getting at here. Like a creativity through the Pisces sun with a business mindedness through the Virgo rising, because I do think Kurt Cobain was more business minded than he let on, because I don't know. I just do.
You don't get signed to a major label and put on to the extent that Nirvana was without ambition and relentless pursuit of that ambition. So Cobain, you know, obviously is a natural born artist, but like he didn't just like fall into stardom. If I'm hearing you right, I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. Another thing I have to point out is there's only one Nepo baby on this entire list, and that's Ansel Elgort. So congratulations.
And Molly Malshine.
I'm not a Nepo baby. Okay, I am. I'm a journalism Nepo baby. I'm a $30,000 a year Nepo baby. So it's true. The rumors are true. But yeah, the only Nepo baby on this list is Ansel Elgort. Why is that, Sarah?
I don't know who his family is. I actually have to go walk the neighbor's dog is what I was just thinking about.
I know.
I don't even know who that is. What is he? He's a DJ?
No, he was
Baby
Tony
Driver, right?
He was Tony in the new West Side Story. Baby Driver, yeah.
Oh.
His dad is Arthur Elgort. He's a photographer. Famous fashion photographer. So
yeah, I don't even know. I don't know.
I don't know. I just think it's cool that, Jeff, your chart does not lend itself to Nepo babyism. All these people had to really pretty much come up from nothing. And
because Virgos work.
From what I know, though, there was like not just not Nepo babies, but I think that there's like serious issues with Steve Jobs and his father, certainly Kurt Cobain and his father. Like there's a lot of that. I think that probably has a lot to do with people excelling or at least attempting to stand up or shine brighter, et cetera. You know, maybe from like that kind of pursuit of like attention, acceptance, love, whatever. You see like people, you know, really, really going for it because maybe as children they were just like, notice me.
Yeah, totally. And a Pisces is not going to listen to authoritarian rules. And we know that most of these people came up in the 20th century, which was an era of really serious authoritarian dads. I think like that's kind of a stereotype, but I think it was the way you parented back then, especially if you were a dad. So it just makes sense that a lot of Pisces that were born in the 20th century would be like, dad, I'm not doing that, you know?
Well, like speaking of like the only founding father on the list, but like Benjamin Franklin was like, I mean, to be a founding father, you're the ultimate, like, you know, leave the nest, you know, rebellious kid. So I feel like he actually, and he was a scientist and a scholar and among yeah. other things, a statesman. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like he actually is a pretty good example of that sort of Pisces break free energy too.
I'm
He's
daddy
hilarious
now.
Also. There's like a lot, like Ben Franklin's really funny.
Oh, I know.
He wrote this thing about like the North American Fart Academy or something. Like essentially it was like the French were like accusing Americans of being like gross basically and like, you know, rough around the edges, etc. So Ben Franklin in response to that like wrote this thing. I like for whatever reason I ended up reading this when I was like in high school and just thought it was the funniest thing. But then he writes this like, you know, essay to the French people about like the North American Fart Academy. So essentially being like, you know, instead of defending us and saying that we're not like ruffians, he was like, well, you think we're rough? Like, here's a fart for you.
My gas is rough.
Yeah.
I'm going to read it. Jeff, thank you so much. Thank
on
you
that
so,
note.
So, yeah, on that note, the talk about Cheesequake. You know what I'm saying?
Whoa.
Talk about a Cheesequake. We've done a full Harold. Thank you so much for coming on the pod.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
It was so fun. I really hope a lot of Pisces, Sun, Aries, Moon, Virgo, Risings, or any combination thereof listened and learned something. Congratulations. You guys are also like Chili, the prettiest TLC member, but we didn't even get into that. I hope everyone got something out of it. Join the Patreon, patreon.com/spacetrashpodcast. Jeff, how can people support you?
Oh, keep putting out those good vibes. Big dog.
Hey.
No, I don't have any you know, links or anything. But if you want to check out some of my music, I am on Spotify, Apple Music, all the streaming services. I'm Jeff Plate, so you can check that out. That'd be great.
Cool.
Thank you so much, Jeff. That was really fun. I'm sorry it took so long. We always take too long.
That's okay. I'm sorry for like being on my phone half the time. I'm like, there's like some stuff going on.
No, it's normal. It's normal to be working at these hours.
This is our work. And actually, work. I have to go walk this dog. So, LOL, BRB. But
I know. Are you dog walking in Florida now too?
Can't stop, won't stop.
All right. Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you, Jeff.
Nice meeting you.
You too.
Space trash.
Trash in space.
Space trash.
Lifestyles, the rich and Uranus.
Space trash.
Celebrities, they're trash, but the astrology can help us understand.
Transmission incoming.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.